I remember thinking to myself, I had a moment where I started to talk to God. And I said, Lord, please help the stop the pain. I kept on asking the paramedic, am I going to die? Am I going to die? And he stopped me and he said, Paul, if you think you're going to die, then there is a possibility that you will. But if you think that you're going to live, you're going to live. And so I thought that was pretty simple advice. And so I took it.
Hi, I'm John Yeager, and this is Bloodworks 101, the podcast brought to you by our friends here at Bloodworks Northwest, designed to inspire you to donate either time, money, or blood. This is a story about how one man's life can affect many. And if you ask that man, he'll tell you it's also about the little things. That man, in this case, is Seattle's Paul Patu, the co-founder of Urban Family, a local nonprofit devoted to the mission of slowing the spread of gun violence. Late in 2023, the Seattle Times reported that 68 people had been killed in Seattle homicides, accounting for nearly half of the 138 killings committed across King County. That's the most ever in a single year. More than three-quarters of the victims died of gunshot wounds. Taking aim at the growth in gun violence in Seattle is Chantel Patu, the executive director and co-founder of Urban Family. She and her husband Paul founded the nonprofit 17 years ago. They are youth and family intervention experts and community leaders. Their mission: to help neighborhoods under duress and to mitigate the influence of systematic poverty, oppression, gangs, and youth violence. To date, Paul says, they've impacted thousands of lives. Recently, I got a chance to sit down with Paul Patu and talk about Urban Family, the impact of one man's life, and about those little things.
Our organization was basically created to work with marginalized youth and young adults and their families. And the goal for us is to build a web of care and support for young people that need it most. And this would be typical of like our target demographic is the kids that don't make it out the system. That might be the kid that gets suspended from school, has nowhere else to go, so he turns to the streets and the street lifestyle, and is on a direct collision with prison, or worse, death. And so our mission is to intervene in that situation and to help to restore a level of care and support so that young person feels safe, connected, and cared for.
And it's not like you come at this out of left field. You know what it's like to need this kind of support from community.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Tell me a little bit more about that.
Well, many years ago, I was the victim of gun violence, and in particular, carjacking. And so, basically was at a stoplight in Seattle. It was a sunny day. Was on my way to a friend's house, and I pulled up to a stoplight, and unbeknownst to me, became a victim of a carjacking. And young man with a mask on pointed his gun in my car and started shooting me. Shot me 5 times. I had no idea what was happening until it was too late. All I heard was gunshots first. Pop, pop, pop. Break yourself. That's what the young man said and he was trying to get into my vehicle. I had enough kind of wherewithal to step on the gas and to get out of there. My first instinct was just to find safety, to get away from this lunatic that had put his gun in my car.
You drove to the hospital yourself, right?
No, actually. I actually drove to a nearby sheriff outpost. And the outpost was there. It wasn't a full-on police precinct. It was just an outpost where the cops kind of hung out in White Center, right off of 16th Avenue. And I basically drove through two lights and drove to where I thought the outpost was and hopefully help, just to find it empty. There wasn't a police officer there. I end up ramming my truck into a car that was parked there. And as I slowly got out, I could feel something warm on the side of on the side of my stomach. And so I put my hand there and I felt this thick, warm blood, and I put it up to my face and I went into shock. I couldn't believe what was happening to me.
But you're here to tell this story. How did you survive?
Oh my goodness. I often ask myself the same question.
Well, what happened?
Well, basically, the paramedics came, but before they did, a man that was working on the building that I was near walked down to me and stooped down on the side of me and didn't say a word. And I had asked him, I said, knowing that I was bleeding, I said, "Hey, do you think you could give me something to stop the bleeding?" And he was in such shock, he didn't say anything. And I couldn't believe, like, actually, I think I asked him for his shirt and he said no. And I thought to myself, oh man, this is not good. But the paramedics were able to get there. They got there. I started to go in shock, eyes rolling my head, and I kept on asking the paramedic, "Am I gonna die? Am I gonna die?" And he stopped me and he said, "Paul, if you think you're gonna die, then there is a possibility that you will. But if you think that you're gonna live, you're gonna live." And so I thought that was pretty simple advice. And so I took it and I thought to myself, positive thoughts, okay, I'm going to get through this. And then they end up driving me to the hospital. And it's everything that you see on TV, right? It's, you know, you're on the gurney and you're looking up and you see all of these images of the streets flicker by. And I'm like, I'm in disbelief. I'm like, I am in this movie. And it was just surreal. And I remember being in such excruciating pain. And as soon as I got there to the emergency room, they stuck these tubes in me. I didn't know what they were at first. I just know it felt like people stabbing me in my rib cage and in my stomach. I remember thinking to myself, I had a moment where I started to talk to God. And I said, "Lord, please help stop the pain." I was in such excruciating pain, the worst pain I had ever felt in my life. And then I remember blacking out. And the next image, or the next thing I remember is awakening in the emergency room, and all of my family members were around me crying. And I thought I had an out-of-body experience, so that I was dead. And so I'm sitting there looking at my family members crying, and then I realized that this machine was breathing for me. This... And I realized that I was still alive and that a machine was breathing for me, and my family members were around me crying. And so... So I remember my family being around me, and at that point, you know, it started to become apparent to me that I had been, something really bad happened. I was shot, and now I'm in an emergency room that I thought was my, out-of-body experience, but I was really there. And I remember my cousin, everyone was crying around me. And my cousin came to the side of my bed, and he was like, "Hey, bro, are you okay?" And with even as much pain as I was in, I still managed to muster up some humor. And I said to him, I'm not okay. And he fell out laughing, and my girlfriend at the time, who's my wife now, she laughed, and it was kind of a sign that things might be okay from this experience. And so, yeah, I end up pulling out of it. It was nothing short of miraculous. I remember being transported to different rooms. And in these rooms, there was one room in particular where I'd come in and out of consciousness, but one room in particular, I heard moaning and groaning. There were other people that were hurt like me in this dark room, this hospital room. And I remember thinking, man, there are other people in this hospital that are going through something similar that I'm going through. I just remember it being, I'd never experienced anything like that in my life. And so... It was a crazy experience.
You must have been saved by donors. You must have relied on blood that was donated by people you'll never know.
Oh, absolutely. And this was the other thing, right? So, this may have been years later. I'm with my mother, and I'm asking her about this experience, and somehow we get on this topic of how I survived, you know, 5 bullet wounds and this horrific experience. And she said, I remember the doctors coming in and saying that I had been in surgery for like 8 hours straight, and that they might need to give me a drug that they were testing to last longer, I guess, or to help mitigate my situation if I went past that 8 hour period of time. And so what I'm really thankful for is that, yes, a lot of blood was donated. Had I not had that blood, I wouldn't be here talking on this mic to you, hands down. You never think about the little things that make the big things work, right? It's, something as seemingly little as donating blood could save a person's life. And I'm here because people donate blood, and I was the recipient of that blood. So.
And now I think about the impact that you've had on countless young people in the area, you and Chantel. And I think if you wouldn't have been here, they might not have gotten the help that they need. Mm. Think about the people you help. You know, I'm reaching out to blood donors right now, but I'm also thinking, you never know what the impact is going to be of that blood donation.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, I'm extremely thankful. It just kind of goes to show, like, we need each other in different ways, right? In order for me to fulfill my purpose in the world, like the work that Chantel and I do, that it takes a lot of little things along the way. Little but big, right? And so, yeah, honestly, I haven't thought about that until now, of what what role that played in me recovering and me getting the care that I needed to fully recover from this horrific experience. And so for that, I am thankful.
How many people do you think, conservatively, you could guess have been impacted by Urban Family's work?
Oh, wow. It's a great question. Don't know if I have numbers, but people come up to Chantel and I all the time as adults that went through our programming, and they are so overwhelmed with joy at seeing us that they made it through a time in their life that was difficult for them. And we get those all the time. And so I don't know the exact number, but it's a significant amount of folks that I feel like we have had the honor and privilege to serve in the Seattle area. So,
and you know, thank God there was enough blood on hand so that you could make it, so that you could help them.
Absolutely.
Anything else I haven't asked you that you feel is important to mention?
I think the idea of important little things that lead up to the big things. I don't think people recognize or understand how important blood donation is. And if you looked at it statistically, how much blood is given to people like me that found themselves in a circumstance outside of my control, that, you know, because it exists, just helps everything else go, if that makes sense. And so, yeah, really appreciative.
Thanks, Paul.
Paul Patu, co-founder of Seattle's Urban Family. If you'd like more information about that fine organization, go to urbanfam.org. And if you'd like to make an appointment to donate blood with us, go to bloodworksnw.org and click on Schedule a Donation. You just never know the impact of a little thing like blood donation. And that just about wraps it up for this edition of Bloodworks 101. I'm your host, John Yeager. See you next time.